Trinadapi Sunichena Tarariva Sahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari Harinama Harinama Harinamaiva Kivalam Kalo Naskeva 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 Gatiranyata Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So I'm speaking on chapter 13 of Bhagavad Gita. Is that the instruction?
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So, chapter 13 of Gita, yes? So, chapter 13 begins the section, the last six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is divided into three sections, six chapters each, with the middle six chapters being the most confidential. And these middle six chapters are protected by the first six and last six chapters. The middle six, the final chapter of the middle six, chapter 12, is Bhakti Yoga, or devotional service, which is the actual conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita. Because Krishna says that if you want to know Him, Bhakti. You want to see Him, the process is Bhakti. At least three times throughout the Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 8, chapter 11, and chapter 18, Krishna has made it clear that the process to come, to comprehend, to know Him, is only through the process of bhakti, loving devotional service. So chapter 13, I have studied it, and it comes out to six different sections. So I'm going to give you an overview of chapter 13. And then, of course, we'll have our question and answer session. Shall I proceed? Well, I'm looking at you. You're the boss. And then I have a special treat. Well, I don't know. I think it's a special treat. I don't know if anybody else will. So let's look at chapter 13, which is entitled Nature, the Enjoyer, and Consciousness. Nature, there are two natures, spiritual nature and material nature. Mostly, this chapter is going to deal with the aspect of the material nature. So this material nature is one of the five subject matters of Bhagavad Gita. The material energy or the material nature, prakriti, is something that all of us are faced to deal with. This whole material existence is a struggle with how to deal with this material nature. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says this material nature is insurmountable. It is all-powerful. Durga, a fort which you cannot escape. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita The only way to escape the fort of this material energy is to surrender to Him. That is what He says in chapter 7. And in chapter 15, He will point out that basically our existence in this material world is a struggle how to adapt or deal with this material energy, this material nature, which is His property, which He claimed in chapter 10. That this material nature, He said, Krishna, is working under my direction. So, material nature, we have to deal with it. There is no escaping. It begins with our own body and mind. We all have to, and that's the essence of that verse in chapter 15. Prakriti stani karshati. You have to deal with the body, namely, chiefly, the six senses. Eyes, ears, nose, tongue. Eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and sense of touch. And then the sixth sense, the sense within, known as the mind. That is what our struggle is in this material world. Nature, and then enjoyer. According to the Bhagavad Gita and the conclusion of Vedanta, the only real enjoyer or Purusha is God. Everything else belongs to God as His energy. And in the Vedas, energy is under the feminine category. So there are two principles, Purusha and Prakriti, the enjoyer and the energy. So, apart from God Himself, everything else is energy. We are also the energy of God, the living entity energy. Therefore, although we have male and female dress, actually we are all female, meaning energy which is meant to be enjoyed by the Purusha, namely God. But, here's the thing. This material world, we come to this material world, why? We want to imitate the Purusha. Therefore, it is an incompatible situation. The Prakriti, the living entity, which is supposed to be subservient to God, comes to this material world trying to imitate, trying to usurp, and trying to be something that it is not really qualified for. So that is the situation of this material world. The living entity is trying to imitate the Purusha, the enjoyer. We may be male, we may be female, but actually, in this material world, everybody is simply trying to enjoy. That's why we've come here. I'll give you an example. Why do people go to Disneyland? They want to enjoy. Why do people watch television? They want to enjoy. Why do people go to Las Vegas? They want to enjoy. The background, impetus for all activities in this material world is, how can I enjoy? So that's another item in this chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that everyone is trying to be the enjoyer, but we're not fit to be the enjoyer, because by nature we are Prakriti, the energy. The energy is meant to be enjoyed by the enjoyer. And when one becomes a fully surrendered soul, he or she gives up that trying to be the enjoyer. That's what it means to surrender. When Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, surrender to me, what he's actually saying is, you should try to stop. You should no longer try to imitate me, because you're not fit for the post. You are meant, this is what Krishna is actually saying, You are meant to be my servant. You are meant to be my lover. You are meant to be subservient to me, to voluntarily give yourself to me. So that is the meaning of the verse in the Bhagavad Gita when Krishna says, give up all varieties of religion and surrender unto me. It means to give up this false notion that I can be the enjoyer. And when one can actually come to that position, that yes, I no longer want to try to imitate God. I no longer see myself as the enjoyer. Now I see myself as the eternal servant of God. That is the point of surrender. And that's why Krishna says, if you can do that, then I protect you from all sinful reactions. Masuchaha. Don't worry. Don't fear. Don't hesitate. Don't doubt. This is encouragement by Krishna for us to do that. Then, nature, the enjoyer, and consciousness. Consciousness is the distinguishing factor. Consciousness is the symptom of the presence of the soul in the body. This table, this microphone stand, this chair, matter has no consciousness. If I come and punch you, after a while you'll say, stop. Right? Because you have consciousness. But I can beat this couch. Is it ever going to say, stop, ouch? No, because it doesn't have consciousness. So consciousness is the indicator that there is the soul present in the body. Just as when a person dies, when the person is alive, then the body is animated and does so many things, has so many experiences, has so many feelings. But once the soul leaves the body, there's no more consciousness in that body. And that's why in Hindu culture, right, they burn the body because they know the soul is gone, there's no more consciousness. Best thing to do, burn the body. So this is the title, Nature, Enjoyer, and Consciousness. Now if you're ready to proceed further in this chapter, please repeat, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Krishna Krishna.
Krishna, Krishna.
Hare Hare.
Hare
Hare.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Rama Rama.
Rama Rama.
Hare Hare. Alright. So the first section of chapter 13, the field and its knower. In Sanskrit, kshetra, the field. Krishna uses this example that the field is the body. Just like a farmer. A farmer has a field. The farmer cultivates the field, the land, in order to grow some crops. So the soul, just as the farmer knows his plot of land, the body is the field, and the soul is the knower of its particular field or body. My consciousness is limited to this body. Your soul, you know about what you're feeling, because this is your field of activity. Just as this is your house. I know you're going to say, no, Prabhu, it's Krishna's house. But this is your house. So, you know everything about your house. And if you don't know, your wife knows. Okay? I don't know your house. I don't think I've even been upstairs. But you know this house because you live in it. So similarly, you know what's going on in your body. I have no idea what's going on in your body. I don't know what you are thinking right now about what I'm saying. All I know is this field. So everybody knows their consciousness is limited to the extent of their own body, their own field. But then, Krishna points out in this chapter that he is different. That because he is situated in everyone's body, Therefore, he knows what's going on in everyone. I don't, but Krishna does. The same Krishna that's in my heart is the same Krishna in your heart. One Krishna knows what's going on in everyone's heart, even though he's situated in everyone's heart. So there's millions and millions and millions and trillions of bodies inhabited by a soul. God is omnipotent, that he knows what's going on in everyone's body. So he is the super knower, or we say super soul, param atma. You and I are simply atma. Krishna in the heart is param atma. And the great Mahajan Bhishma Dev gives us a nice example how to understand how one Krishna can be situated in everyone's body, in the heart. Bhishma Dev said, the example of the sun. The sun is, there's only one sun in the sky. But if we were to go to a big open field and we would place 1,000 kalashas, water pots. So we fill up each one of those kalashas with water. At noon, like day like today, so nice, right? Bright sun. So at noon, you would look in all those 1,000 kalashas. What would you see in the water? The sun. But that doesn't mean that there's 1,000 suns. One sun is reflecting in the 1,000 kalashas. Same way. One God reflecting in everyone's heart. That's why he's omnipotent. Because he has that ability to be one and at the same time present in the many. So, this is the first lesson of this chapter. To know, first of all, the difference between the field and the knower of the field. To know the difference between the body and the soul. Same thing that was explained in chapter 2. It's such an important concept that Krishna comes back to it here in chapter 13. And why? Because why would Krishna come back to it again? Because unless this is understood, you can't go on to higher topics. You're not going to be able to proceed. This point has to be understood. Or accepted. It has to be accepted. That much, it has to be accepted. Otherwise, you'll not be able to proceed to other topics. The beginning of spiritual transcendental knowledge is this. There's a field, my body. There's a knower of the field, me, the soul. And there is a super knower who knows all the fields. The next section of this chapter 13 is the process of knowledge. In this section, Krishna points out all the different items that really distinguish someone who has knowledge. And what's the first thing he says? Humility. If somebody wants real knowledge, the first requirement is humility. And he gives other items, non-violence. And another one in the list, accepting the importance of self-realization. That's also a big item of knowledge. And another one is accepting a spiritual master. Just like you're an engineer, right? You're also an engineer? Okay, that's another kind of engineer, computer engineer. All right? So, you had to have training, you had teachers, right? If I want to be a doctor, I have to have training, I have to have teachers. If I'm an athlete, I have to have a trainer, a coach. So in every field in this material world, you need a teacher. And reading books on your own can only take you so far. You need a trainer. Even your great, great athlete, they have trainers. They have coaches. So what to speak of spiritual perfection, the perfection of human life? You need, it is required, to have a spiritual trainer, like I have on my car. I have my sign. Spiritual trainer. That is my profession. So in order to have knowledge, real knowledge, one needs to accept a spiritual trainer. So different items, I can't think of, there's 18 or 20 different items that comprise real knowledge. So the next section Krishna explains is understanding the super soul. And we already explained that super soul is Krishna in the heart. And when Krishna is explaining the super soul, he says he has his eyes everywhere because he's a person. He has his hands everywhere, his legs everywhere, because he's within every heart. So his hands, face, his legs are everywhere. He sees everything. He is the... So therefore, Krishna uses this phrase. What is the function of this super soul? Why is Krishna in the heart? Krishna is in the heart to act as your anumanta and upadrashta. He is acting in two capacities. In other words, he's there for a reason. There's a reason why Krishna is in the heart. One thing is that he's overseeing. He's looking at everything we do. And the next thing he's doing, sanctioning or not sanctioning. Giving permission and not giving permission, depending on how I work. So these are the two functions of the super soul. Overseeing or noticing, keeping record, and the next thing is sanctioning. That when Krishna sanctions something, then I am successful. It's not that I am independent. It's not like the atheist or the gross materialist thinks. The gross materialist or atheist thinks that life is simply a mechanical device. And they think there's no need for God, no need for religion. Just learn how this material nature works, you'll be successful. That can only go so far. There's some validity to that, because this material world is a machine and it acts under certain laws. So yes, to a certain extent, you can reject God, deny God, avoid God, and you can be somewhat successful. But the day will come when you think, I have done everything according to the material plan, but still you're not successful. And that's when they have a big puzzle. They did everything. They dotted all their I's, crossed all their T's, did everything required for the material perfection, and they didn't get it. Why? Because actually, as will be stated in the 18th chapter, there's one thing they forgot, that Krishna in the heart sanctions. And if he says no, you can try. If Krishna says no, it ain't going to happen. What was that statement? Was it, I forget who said, you might know, from the Ramayana, that whoever Ram wants to kill, nobody can. Who said that? But in the Ram Leela, do you know who said it? Was it who? That's Tulsidas. So it's him giving, it's not necessarily something said by Lakshman or, okay. Anyway, say the verse in the mic. When you just quoted, Rocky, yeah, say it. Right. So that's Tulsi Das. You're not sure. Yes. All right. Well,
there is another verse in Ramayana. Hovatu vahi jo Ram rachi rakha ta koi krat badhave saka. Same meaning. Whatever Ram decides, that's what's going to happen. Doesn't matter what you interpret or it's not going to change. That's from Ramayana.
Yes. Yeah. But and we don't know who this actual.
When I just said, that's from Ramayana Tulsidas.
But that's Tulsidas's yes. Purport. Okay. Okay. Very good. So, that is what Krishna says in chapter 18 of Bhagavad Gita. Daiva. Daiva means, yes, your destiny, but your destiny indicates the hand of God, the sanctioning of God. The same idea is expressed in the Bhagavatam when Prahlad is offering prayers to Lord Narsingha, that you may go to the topmost physician and you may say to the physician, I don't care what it costs, cure me. But if God says no, that you can spend all your money, the physician will not be able to save you. And you know the story that I've told 1,000 times. I went to one Jain doctor, Dr. Bhutta, when I came back from India in 1995, and I had bronchitis. So I said to Dr. Bhutta, Doctor, how much does the medical profession know? And he said, 20%. I was shocked. 20%? I said, Doc, that's a failing grade. So it just goes to show that we may think we know everything, that we've done everything, but without the sanction of God. So that is what Super Soul does. Sanctions. Allowing one person to be successful and another person, in this particular instance, not to be successful. So the next section is who can see the Super Soul? You have to become qualified. Krishna says in this chapter that if you want to see the Super Soul, then you have to become free from material desires. You have to become free from material contamination, and you have to develop transcendental vision. This transcendental vision is developed, or it is cultured, by studying the revealed scriptures and living a spiritual life. For instance, my grandson, he is trying to become an Olympic swimmer. He's 17 and he is being trained to become an Olympic swimmer. So if he wants to be an Olympic swimmer, then he has to live a certain lifestyle. There's a certain way that he's going to have to conduct himself in order for him to be an Olympic swimmer. So the same way, if one wants to see God in the heart, there is a process of how one should live. Then you're able to see God. My spiritual master would sometimes talk about this, that people will say, I don't believe in God. Show me God, then I will believe. You probably have heard that from people. I don't believe in God because I have not seen Him. Show me God, then I will believe. So the answer to that question is, yes, we can show you God, or shall we say, God will be revealed to you, but you must be willing to accept the process by which He be revealed. We're not in the position to dictate to God, hey God, show yourself to me, then I will believe you. God says, no. For instance, can any one of us here call up President Obama? Hey, I want to talk to Obama. Anybody here can do that? You're not on that level. You're not on that level. And he's just the president of a stupid country called the United States of America. What to speak of God? God is so far from that. So when people say, I'll believe in God when he shows, that is such a ludicrous. It's called arrogance, hubris. No. God is already indicating how he can be seen. That's what's explained in Bhagavad Gita. He says it clearly. You want to see me? First you have to become obedient. And after obedient, you have to learn how to love me. Then I will reveal myself to you. But that's the problem. We have no desire. We say, phooey, let me enjoy. Okay. But if you want to see God, then the Bhagavad Gita is pointing out what is that process. It begins with surrender and obedience to what God says, and then gradually developing love. And the chapter ends with Krishna explaining how there is one sun in the sky, and that one sun is so powerful that the whole universe gets light from the sun. One sun lights up the whole universe. That sun, being a representative of Krishna, is so powerful. Krishna says, in the same way, one soul in the body, your soul, is so powerful that it gives consciousness and strength and power to the whole body. One soul in the body, one sun in the sky. And that is how I give you a synopsis of chapter 13 of Bhagavad Gita. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.